everybody. This is BitNote with David Collins. We'll be playing video game music and talking about the games they're from. Have a good listen and listen what's out there. Okay, so thanks for tuning in to BitNote. We'll be talking about video game music, and let's start off with a bit of a classic in my mind. This is from the video game called Fur Fighters, which was... Actually, why don't I just play the title theme? And that was the title theme tuned to Fur Fighters, which was developed by Bizarre Creations. Now, the composers is a little tricky to nail down because, like I said, it's actually trying to actually figure out the composers. I mean, I always really try to get the right credits for these people because, you know, they create these cool songs that I'm playing, so you definitely need to give them credit. But sometimes with games, it's a little trickier. Oftentimes, there'll be more than one music composer. And sure, they'll be mentioned in the credits of the actual game, but it won't be quite divided up about which songs they actually contributed to. Now, this is kind of understandable because unlike a movie where you might have like 5, 10, maybe 20 songs at most, in video games, you could have music pretty much in every place. You've got background music, you've got theme music, you've got ending credits, title credits. You've got often you've got several different remixes of a single song. And in fact, that's a good Fur Fighters is a good example from that. That you hear the title theme tune there, but there's different remixes of it in different levels. And like for instance, oh, this is really cool. At one stage, you reach this giant piano that's like playing out a piano version of that. So what I meant to say, and then there's also this more slow-paced version of that for this other level. So there's so many different places which music can be used in a video game that and which leads to so many different songs that it's sometimes tricky to know, well, who had a hand in which exact song. Now, obviously, sometimes that they are soundtrack compilations, and that makes it a lot easier. And then it gets celebrated. But in cases like this, this is kind of an obscure... Well, it's not obscure, but it's one of these cult games. But this is one of those games where there's not really a strong... It's just a lot harder to get details on who, you know, did the songs. Obviously, if a soundtrack gets a huge following, there'll be fans who are willing to give clear definitions of, you know, who made which song. But in this case, whoever made that, or it may have been one or more of the following people. Rick Fox, Stephen Root, Mick Pummel, Simon Robertson, and Nelson. And by the way, there's a bit of a mix-up because some of them were composers, where some of them were producers, and yeah. So yeah, there were producers and composers. You're never quite sure which one. But yeah, it's quite a nice song, and it actually there was actually an innovative part about this in the music. The innovative part was like, basically, you had multiple characters, and each character had their own personality, and the actual background music of the game would change depending on which character you played as. So one of them was more Chinese, so the background music would change to have more gongs, and, you know, it was actually a really innovative part about the game. I mean, I don't think any game really does that, to create, like, something like five different background musics, you know, compositions of given background music for each stage. Obviously, each thing was a variation on the core theme, but, you know, still, it was very clever. There's so many different ways that music can be blended or mixed or made interactive through video games. It's not like a movie where it just plays at set points and there's tight control. It reminds me, actually, a while back, there was a guy putting on a demonstration video in a Sonic the Hedgehog level, and what he did was he worked on a program that would vary the music depending on basically which stage the character was at and how well the character was playing. That's actually another common thing some video games have. They can actually change the music of the game depending on how well you're playing. Space Channel 5 was a classic example of this. It had a nice upbeat, funky, zazzy thing, and it was kind of like an early rhythm game where you just had to press the right button at the right moment, and well, it was more remembering combinations actually. But if you did really badly, suddenly the music started going apart and like out of wailing and like they're making mistakes, and it was just, you had to just, but the better you did, of course, the more competently, strongly, and, you know, greatly the music would play. I'm using the best adjectives here. But I suppose in that sort of like whole thing, I mean, in the many ways that music can be used in video games, what was Fur Fighter the game like? It was actually a very good game. The mechanics were a lot like, you know, shoot 'em ups. It's, you know, you moved around, you had weapons, you could switch between weapons. But the entire game was played basically with cartoon animals, which gave it a very nice sort of twist to it. So it was like basically badass cartoon animal. It had a sense of humor, and essentially there's a group of villagers. There's like this, there's this tigress like cat, there's this dog, a kangaroo, a tiny little dragon who probably Spyro took inspiration, you know, maybe, and of course, you know, a kangaroo, and of course a penguin. And essentially they got this nice little village, but then what happens is that there's this bad guy comes and ends up kidnapping all their kids, so they have to go on a trek across very many different areas in order to get their kids back. So this involves like a Soviet satellite and like this great big construction in the dam in the forest. And actually the first level takes place in New Quack City, which is basically New York City. But yeah, so they create like various versions of all these different places, and it's everything. The levels are always so vibrant and so colorful, and essentially you can choose, you move the character, and at specific points you can change the characters from one to the other, and basically they've all got separate skills, so you choose whichever character gives you the skills that you need at that right moment. And the game could actually get a little more cerebral at times. Sometimes you get more puzzle solving. You have to think up some clever solution to the thing rather than just go in guns blazing. Although, of course, the game does let you go in guns blazing. And when you shoot an animal, they start bleeding fluff. Yeah, you basically beat the stuffing out of the animals. It's all kind of cutesy and fun, but also just, you gotta admire it. It's kind of crazy. It's just people going that sort of energy into it. I mean, at one stage, you're even like dealing with the New Quack Center, which is basically the World Trade Center. This, you can tell this came out before 2001. Well, I think it actually came out on 2001 or shortly before. But and actually they ended up porting it to the PS2 and releasing it as is without removing the Twin Towers, which was actually a huge thing at the time, which is a thing, because back then there were so many reports of games getting delayed because people were removing the World Trade Center from their video games, because as I covered in the last show, New York City does tend to have depicted in video games very often. But yeah, it was like, you know, one stage you had to move counterweights around in the World Quack Center, so one tower leaned over and hit the other tower, and then you could just jump across the gap, and then, well, you could restore it to how it was before. But the game just had a very goofy sense of humor, good sense of fun, very bright and colorful, and a lot of fun things going on in each level. And I mean, one of the levels that I was just describing there with the piano is basically you end up finding this civilization of dinosaurs where everything is gigantic. So, I mean, literally the theme you heard was played out on this huge scale pianos, and you'd actually walk around on the piano, and then you try to get the the keys would go up and down by themselves, and then you try to move on to one of those up and down keys and use it to jump and jump at the top, so you'd get all these little collectibles and stuff. So there were so many different ways. It was definitely a colorful, fun game. Oh, as part of the sense of humor, the main villain of the game is a big white cat that has a pet human that's bald. So yeah, certainly you went into the old Bond inspiration there. But It was a lot of fun. I played it for the Sega Dreamcast. There are even a couple of, like, little gigantic arcade games, like I said, and you move around and walk a character around so they hit the buttons to win the game. It's a very fun, just vibrant game, and by Bizarre Creations. Bizarre Creations were a British studio, by the way. The British have made a lot of really class game studios, by the way, for anyone who, especially during the 90s, it's weakened off a lot, and Bizarre Creations was one of them. They shuttered down a few years back. A lot of games studios that I've played shuttered down, but this was a big one. I mean, they made a lot of ones, The Club, Project Gotham Racing. It's kind of a pity, because there were some great guys in that studio, but it's, I don't know, I was just thinking of, well, so many studios either get bought out and then close down, or go out of business, or just change, and I don't know, it's kind of a pity, but I suppose it happens. But Bizarre Creations, they made some great stuff, and so for Fighters, maybe it wasn't the huge success they were hoping for, and now they feel that things have changed, that people wouldn't want some cartoony shoot 'em up game, but you know, I think it was a good game. I definitely fondly remember it, so thanks for making it. I'm just going to play another track from that game. It's a New York track, or New Quack City track, whatever. And it's Juliet's version of that track, Who's the Cat? And actually, I remember a fun part about that. You get to walk around the housing, the village, basically, of the creatures that you're playing as. And it's just a lot of fun, because there are a lot of, like, fun little jokes about it. And there's, like, a waterfall and, like, tide going in and out. But if you go into Juliet, who's, you know, a female cat's house, you basically see this wardrobe. And when you walk into the wardrobe, you just suddenly find yourself in this gigantic room, like, that goes on for, like, rows and rows full of clothing. So I just really love little gags like that. But here's the track. Hope you enjoy. And credited, of course, to the same people that I mentioned before. Okay, time for another track, and this is also by a British developer. Have a listen, and I hope you enjoy. And there you have Pugsy. Pugsy is Sega Mega Drive, Traveller's Tales, like I said, that's another British game studio. The music there was by Andy Blythe, Martin Joustra, and Sean Hollingsworth, simply all have credit. But I believe a lot of it also goes to Matt Furness, who's a big guy in classic composition back there, composed and converted a lot of stuff like the Lemmings tunes and everything, so definitely good credits there. But Pugsy, boy, this is a great game. Okay, I mean, it's basically about this cute little alien who lands on a planet, and later on when he's exploring, his spaceship gets kidnapped, so he has to get it back. Okay, so that's the simple. The whole thing is that the island he's on has got so many different worlds and themes. There's volcanoes and ice caps and jungles and little villages and towns and beaches and coves and mountains and these medieval-esque areas and these Egyptian-esque areas. I mean, it's all bright and colourful. Each sort of area like has three kind of themed levels to it. And I mean, like, there's like 20, 30 levels in the game. So many levels. And get this, I mean, it's not even a case of, you go through the levels in sequential order. No, there's a bunch of games. You could easily go right through the level and not even realise that that they're like, you know, countless levels which you completely missed. Because each level is like, it's a route through a map in the island. But if you find a different exit to the level, you'll find a different, it'll lead in a different direction. So it's just, it's one of those games that, you know, it looks nice and cutesy. It looks like cute little alien. But when you actually look into it, there's actually a lot of thought involved. There's a lot of problem solving and puzzles and stuff, like putting balls into these things that transport and flipping switches and stuff. But it's also sort of clever in some of the more puzzles as well. Essentially, you're playing an alien, and one of the strongest things you can do is pick up items. But it's not like standard, like, pick up items where you click it and then it appears in an inventory. When you like walk along as your alien and actually pick up an item, you actually literally hold that item in front of you, and you can raise the item and lower the item, and you can move it, and you can hit the item against other things, and you can drop it. And here's a fun part: you can even stack multiple items up on top of each other. In fact, a couple of cheats or things of the game work on the basis of walking out of a level with the specific items stacked on top of each other. But it's like, you know, if you move too fast or anything, then the items on top of it fall off. And that was actually a puzzle in one of the levels. There's an item you can't pick up, so you have to knock it onto an item that you can pick it up, and then lift that item and then move it, so and be careful that the island on top doesn't fall off. And I mean, there's so many other things, like you can get a can, you can pick up a candle and then throw it into fire and light it, and then one level has you use that to like light up this entire lighthouse. And then you've got this little inflatable balloon, and what you can do is you can either like inflate it, and then you can use it to pull you up and lift you up into the air, or you can jump on top of the balloon and then, you know, and let it raise you up into the air, but then maybe your weight is too low for it, so what you do is you keep jumping on it. So when you jump up, the balloon rises and you land back and you land down. I mean, and of course, you know, you can move and jump and throw and the items can bounce and everything. So it's like, you know, early example. I mean, physics have always been part of video games, but that's an early example of like items bouncing across, bouncing about and doing stuff. And it's just a fun game, and it engages you in many ways. And like, they're colorful environments, and then you can, you know, wear sunglasses and sneakers or shoes or running shoes or runners or whatever, just at certain parts to speed you up. I mean, that was a thing back then. If you played a game and you had something that had a shoe on it, that would mean it would make you faster. It was always the way. There was never any exceptions that I can think of. It's just item with shoe make you run faster. And this game was the same. You didn't just get the shoes. You got them in a shoe box. And they weren't just normal shoes. You could see them wearing these fancy, you know, white fluorescent shoes. But the game was just engaging and it was fun. And, you know, you ran about the place and you solved the puzzles. And then sometimes you get cheats to find out more levels. And it also included a couple of nice homages to classic video games. I mean, you know, they say we're classic now. And I mean, like, what then was classic? I mean, it's still classic. But I mean, like, Space Invaders and Asteroids and stuff. There were a couple of nice things there. Of course, the fun part is that even nowadays, it's Pugsy itself is a classic game. But I think it's underrated. It engaged you in a mental way. You could use every item you could pick up, throw, run, jump, use. And sometimes you could throw items at enemies, but you had to hit them in just the right way, wasn't it? And I suppose that's why I love the game. I like it. And as I said, it was made by a British studio. Just had a sense of charm and bit of cheek and a bit of fun and involvement. And it was just exciting because the way you threw everything around, it meant there were a lot of combinations for things to go. And it was just fun to experiment, fun to explore, fun to think up the new solutions to all these problems. And I have to say, Pugsy, it's a great game and a lot of fun. Just far more than just a standard platformer. It really just was a great game. All right, we're going to move on to our last game, and it's going to be a good one, I can tell you. We're moving from a game where you throw around objects in order to defeat enemies and reach a goal, to a game where you throw around objects and use them to defeat enemies to achieve a goal. I am speaking of none other, rather than Pugsy, which is back in the early 90s, we are now going to the mid-noughties, and 2004 precise, to play Mindgate. PsyOps, I mean. PsyOps, the Mindgate Conspiracy. This is yet another good cult classic games. It's the setup is pretty thing. You're a soldier with amnesia in the future. There is a conspiracy. You may have been part of it. You are trying to find the truth, and they are bad guys, and you must defeat them. And bloody look, you're not playing it for the plot. Although the cutscenes are pretty decent. The cool thing is you have, or you get really early on the game, telekinetic power. You're basically a psyops. You're a government operative that learned all these psychic powers and stuff, and you get more throughout the game. But the fun thing is you can like move things with your mind. Now, this was in 2004, so same year that Half-Life 2 came out and everyone suddenly says revolutionized. With Half-Life 2, they had a gravity gun where you picked up things and you shot them at enemies. So you'd like pick up like a toilet and then hurtle the toilet across the room to defeat some zombie or something, or combine an enemy. I just found Sittinger blocks worked pretty well. But Mindgate, you know, both of these games used the Havok physics engine, but PsyOps, the Mindgate Conspiracy, which was, by the way, developed by Midway Games, did this pretty much the same year with the same Havok physics engine, and essentially it was really, really cool. You could, like, pick up enemies and throw them at walls. You could pick them up enemies and throw them at you could pick up explosive barrels and throw them at enemies, and they'd blow up. Or you could pick up enemies, throw them at explosive barrels, that hit the barrels would blow up, and they'd throw them across to the other side of the room. Or then you could pick up just gigantic solid objects and throw them at enemies. I mean, it just had a great system, the whole thing. I hear that it's been done later in other ways in games such as Advent Rising, and which I mean to play someday. I have made it my ambition to play Advent Rising because I hear it's got some good music. I've got this pseudo rule that I don't play music on this show from games that I haven't played. Rise. I'm going to play it, that game, purely for the basis of giving you some of its music. And I'll make that a promise to you. But I believe also some Star Wars games, Force Unleashed, I think, did something like this. I haven't played either of those games. But with PsyOps, it's just damn fun. You pick up enemies and throw them, and sometimes you pick up these great big spherical things and throw them. I mean, the guys didn't add this as a feature or a bullet point or whatever. They added it because it was fun. There's literally like this playroom in the game, which you can get in the extras menu, which allows you just to mess around with all these like pyramid of stacked objects and balls and stuff. And this is pretty new, you know, when physics and, you know, the idea that if you threw something at a pile of objects, the pile of objects would collapse and everything. This is pretty new back then. It's been done a while before, but somehow, even though it's been done, it's still fun. It's still fun just to throw things around the place and everything. And it's not just that too. You also get other powers too. You can pyrokinesis, set things on fire. And one of the cool things is you can actually remote control enemies and get them, you know, suddenly invade their minds, suddenly control their every action, which is fun because sometimes what you do is, I had this whole thing where I mean, like, you could just get enemies to, like, shoot each other or walk right over to explosive barrels and shoot and unload their gun into it until it blew up. And then, of course, at the end of the level, you get one of your statistics would tell you how many times you caused an enemy to commit suicide, which is slightly morbid, but the developers knew what we'd be using it for. And I suppose that's another thing. I think while we could focus on the physics and while we're obviously not, and the cutscenes are passable and the storyline, whatever, there was a big hook for a sequel. But unfortunately, it didn't come through. But what mattered to me most was the developers knew what fun was. It wasn't just the physics or any individual components. The developers knew that people wanted to have fun. They wanted to do cool stuff, and they crafted each level for that purpose. They've even included like an arcade mode where you can just race through the level, you know, without any of the cutscenes or storyline things enabled, and just get high scores or get a fast time, or even just change the models or give yourself all the powers from the beginning. I mean, these are developers that knew you had a game to have fun and mess around with stuff, and that's really one of the cool things about the game. And I think that's about it. They didn't fall short on the soundtrack anyway. They actually had an established band called Cold, which is a, I think, post-grunge band, apparently, from their Wikipedia page. Sorry, I apologise to all grunge fans out there. I am not a huge fan. I sometimes feel out of my depth. But the point is, they made a game and a music video specifically focused on this game. It is called With My Mind, and you are now about to listen to it. So, I would like to thank you all for listening. This has been a good show, and I hope you've learned a few really cool games. So if any of you out there, you know, like to play it, it'll be hard to play Pugsy without a Mega Drive. I'm not sure where you can play PsyOps, and Fur Fighters is for Dreamcast and PlayStation 2, both of which are hard to get. So yeah, if you want to play any of the games I've mentioned, it's going to be a bit difficult to find them. But I wish you, if you're curious, they're all good games. Wish you the best of luck. Here is With My Mind from Cold. This has been BitNote with David Collins. Thanks for listening.
Deception's free, things I can't control, taking over.